This is Eye on Real Estate, your premier source for real estate information. From the heart of New York City and the tri-state area to the most active real estate hotspots across America. Keeping you plugged in to the latest real estate market trends. From mortgage news and legal developments to everything you need to know about buying or selling a property. Benefited by the advice of the experts. Now, here's the host of Eye on Real Estate, the vice chair of Douglas Elliman, Dottie Herman.
We're back. I'm Dottie Herman. You're listening to Eye on Real Estate. We have two great guests for the second half of the show. We're first going to be joined by Forrest Letchman Middleton. He's the founder of FLM Ceramics, potter, a tile maker, hill and custom tile. And then at 11:30, we'll be joined by Susan Sully, architect and interior design writer, and the author of Past, Present Living with Heirlooms and Antiques. So, let's begin with Forrest. Did I call you Forrest?
Forrest, yeah.
Forrest. Okay, how did you get involved with this? You know, give us your background.
Sure, sure. So, I've been a potter since I was a kid. So, I started making pots in high school kind of as a way to get out of trouble. And so, I was about 14, started making pots. And then went to college. I'm originally from Vermont, but I grew up in Seattle and in Vermont as well, which is kind of a strange bi-coastal situation.
Yes.
By the time I moved back to Vermont, I was told I could do this in college. So I ended up going to college in upstate New York at a big ceramics college called Alfred University, and it just totally blew my mind. And so got involved blowing glass and doing neon and, of course, working in clay because it's what I've always done. And had some amazing, amazing teachers. And then moving forward from there, thought I was going to be a potter, and that's what I was going to end up doing for the rest of my life. And became quite successful at that, went to graduate school. It was a very abbreviated version of this. But then by the time I got out of graduate school, it was like, how do you make your living as a potter?
Yeah.
And I was doing craft shows and showing in galleries, and my work was being collected, and at the same time still felt like I had kids at that time, like, how do you make your ends meet? And then I was making, literally just making coasters so I could have something at a low enough price point for people who couldn't afford my work to be able to, you know, take home, because the surfaces that I make are pretty unique. And so if a college kid comes to a show I'm doing, or a high school kid who can't afford a $300 teapot, maybe they could walk away with almost like a paint chip of the surfaces on a coaster or on a little tile. And then a woman who was the PR rep for this fledgling tile company that became one of the biggest online tile retailers in the world. And she fell in love with my work and brought it to the woman she was working for. And I had a meeting with her. And one of the takeaways for me out of that meeting was that she basically doubled my prices and then asked if I had a forklift. And you can imagine, as a potter, you know, working in your home studio, when someone asks you that, you realize the magnitude of what tile is to an artisan. And, you know, you've got this thing that you do that's handmade, and all of a sudden, you know, it's commodifiable, it's scalable. And, you know, because the surfaces I had worked on for years and years, already had some traction and were pretty unique surfaces, it really just took off, and I became their number one handmade tile maker. And it was not an easy relationship. It was a little tricky, and I wanted more face time with designers, and I wanted more face time with the people installing my work. I wanted to be able to talk to, you know, the homeowners whenever possible,
right,
but
right.
going through designers meant the world to me, because my favorite thing in the world is to talk to people and to share what it is that's important, not only to them, but to me, and then see if there's some sort of symbiosis there.
Okay, so now, how would so we're talking about somebody who doesn't want to go to a store and just buy standard tiles. Somebody who
right.
wants to be a little bit more creative or have them custom. Okay, so where do you begin? First of all, I know you wrote a book. And you're the... Okay, and you're the author of Handmade Tile, Design
Patent. Yeah.
Okay, and can you get that on Amazon, and how do you get that book?
You can. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at, I think, most bookstores. It's essentially, I was asked to write a book by a publisher called Quarto. They've written a lot of, they've published a lot of books by actually peers of mine, people that I know very well, on pots. And they got this idea that someone should write a book on tile. I had started making tile, and I do a lot of social media, so I was sharing that out there. And people were sort of going, oh, this is a possibility. I also teach workshops all over the world. Oh. And so they thought, hey, you should write a book. So I wrote this book, but I didn't want to write a book that was just about me or just about the act of making a tile. Because for me personally, if I'm going to write something, I want it to come from my vantage point. And I think sort of the philosophy behind the book is, sure, you can make a tile, but how do you make a surface that's interesting on the tile? Otherwise, it, like you said, it's just tile that you're going to get at Home Depot or, you know, a big box store. So the surface is important. The technical aspect of tile is very hard. So how do you sort of conquer that? But then more important to me was, how do you work with designers, and how do you work with tile setters, and how do you install it if you want to do it yourself? So it covers a lot of bases.
All right, so let's start with the beginning, because so somebody who decides, I went to the stores, I really want to be a little bit more creative and not have just standard tiles. Then,
right.
Okay, now, would they get a hold of someone like you, and then would they tell you, listen, you know, I just want to figure out a design, or I want to make, do they have to make them, or can they just do the design?
No.
And somebody else may? So what's the whole process like, and who would be
so using the process? Yeah, the process for us is different than it might be from the next person. And that, you know, it's the nice thing about handmade tiles, everybody has their own business model. And the way that ours runs is, we have a sort of a slate or a library of tile patterns that we make and tile shapes that we make. And that library of tile shapes and patterns is a little bit flexible for people. But if you wanted to buy tile and you went to our website, you essentially would contact us directly. And that, to me, is the key to everything, is to be able to talk to people directly. And if what you liked was in our collection, then you could just order that and say, hey, I want, 100 of these tiles, or 100 square feet, or however you see it. And then that sort of starts the clock. So we send an invoice, we talk about shipping, crate, we talk about all the details that you're not going to hear, from somebody in a big box store. And we talk about surface. And then once we receive a deposit, it starts the clock. We make the tile. Usually our lead times are about 8 weeks. When you get into the custom range of what we do, we work with designers all the time doing, number one, our own tile, but not too uncommon, we'll do something for a designer that says, hey, we've seen your tile in Lux or in Architectural Digest, and we really love these surfaces, but we have a client who has a very specific need, and we're wondering if you can do X, Y, or Z. And if we can do it, we'll be really honest, and we'll take that on. And if we can't, usually I have a suggestion of who they can talk to. And where the scale of our business is, we're somewhere between the craft tile or potter maker, somebody who's doing this out of their home, who has a home studio making a living as a potter, and the manufacturing level, a company that's making thousands of square feet a day, like Heath or like Fire Clay Tile or someone like that.
Right.
So I talk to everybody. I mean, some people right. call and they're like, oh my God, I didn't think I'd be talking to the owner. But the reality is, we're very approachable. We're not like this huge company.
That's great. Because I always prefer talking and having a relationship with someone. And I also think you get to know what somebody's needs are a little better that way. You've worked on private homes. You've worked on restaurants, businesses throughout the world. How does your work differ on private residences versus a business?
It's actually not as different as you might think. So We're supplying the same tile. We've done backsplashes in taco bars, and we've done floors in retail spaces and things like that. But the majority of what we do is working with homeowners. And whether or not that's through a designer, which I just love that relationship, because designers come to us and they already know sort of the language.
Right.
And so it's a collaboration. That's really what it comes down to. And then I'd say probably 30% of what we do is direct with homeowners. And when we have that conversation, I also, you know, as a teacher, as an educator, I also really love that sort of conversation as well, because you get some people who know nothing about what they want to do, but they see what we do and they go, my God, that's going to give our house a little bit more grounding, or that's going to add a piece of history to sort of what it is that we have that's very modern. To balance out this modern home, we want to add something that sort of grounds it in, whether it's the history of ceramics, the history of pattern, the history of, you know, their background, whatever it is. And so our tile really touches on that. It touches a lot on content and history. And so I think it's like an art piece.
So Forrest, do you have like a website? Like if I was like interested in custom tiles, and I wanted to see what you already have, is there a place I would go?
Yeah, our website is FLM, which are my initials, Forrest Lesh Middleton.
FLM, because I'm going to post this. FLM,
Ceramics.
Ceramics. Okay, so if they go to FLM Ceramics, then they would go onto your website and they would get a good feel. They might like some things that you've already done and want to order that. Or let's say they see something and maybe they want a different color or they like a little difference. They can then work with you on something custom. Because what must the what should a homeowner consider before installing tiles in a home?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially with handmade tile, because it is a whole different beast. If you go to get, you know, big box store tile or tile from a major manufacturer, everyone's going to know how to install that. One of the things in my book that we talk about is how to build a relationship even with your tile setter. Some tile setters work on, you know, track homes, and they're just bombing through these installs, and they're not thinking a lot about the particulars of the tile because it's all exactly the same tile.
Right.
So one of the things, I've developed a lot of great relationships. I interviewed a guy named Paul Vianello, who's from where I live, and he's become a really dear friend, and he taught me a lot about what it means to set my tile versus to set tile from Dahl Tile, who is, you know, major manufacturer. And so I interviewed him for the book. So there's a whole spread of him talking about what does it mean to install handmade tile versus what does it mean to install big box store tile.
Well, is it more fragile handmade tile?
No, it's not necessarily more fragile. It's just, it's more idiosyncratic, right? You know, like the crux of making tile is how do you make something flat? And there's so much technical stuff that goes into that as a craftsperson versus as a manufacturer. Manufacturers have the capability, the machinery, the technology to make something flat all day long, every day. But the people that I'm teaching to, it's like, how do you get to a level of consistency that is approachable by a homeowner, approachable by a tile setter? So a tile setter might pick up our tile and say, well, it's not all perfectly matched, or, you know, it's got a little, what they call lippage, which is a little raised edge or something. And what we do is we talk to them and we talk, you know, this is made literally by hand. The history of tile is about the handmade. And it's so important to talk about craft when you talk about tile, because you're not going to get what we do out of a manufactured tile. You're just not. And you're not going to, it's not going to feel good. It's like the difference between holding a handmade cup and holding a cup from Target. And, you know, you're not going to buy a handmade cup for $4. You're going to buy a cup from Target for $4.
And, you know, it's those things that really make your house unique and
absolutely
different. Now, let me ask you something. Where are some of the more unconventional places that people can use tile in their decorating?
It's a great question. Right when my book was coming out, we were working on a project that happened to be local, and it was super cool because I could go up there and check on the project. I got to know the homeowner. She's now become a really good friend. And this is a multi-million dollar house. Primarily, we're working, you know, with anyone from, hey, I want some tile coasters, to somebody who, you know, it's like, sometimes I feel like I can't even afford my own tile. And so what they did was they had their designer sort of lay out all these sort of unique locations, and it's great that you asked. So she did staircase risers. And one of the things that felt so good when that was installed, it's like you're walking up in this house that's, you know, all houses are relatively dark on the ground floor. But as you get higher and higher and higher in this house, there's more and more light. And this tile is sort of carrying you up into that space because it's at eye level and you're just elevating as you go up. Another wow. space in that house that I thought was really lovely was they did a water line in their pool with our tile. And we've done that, and we've done, obviously, entryways, backsplashes. We've even done, this is kind of crazy, we've even done, like, people's, like, motorhomes or adventure vans, where they, like, I just want 10 tile, so that when I'm, you know, in the middle of nowhere, you know, sleeping in my tent or sleeping in my van, and I'm going to go and make a cup of coffee, I want your tile as a little tiny backsplash. I mean, it's incredible. You know, we've done, you know, pizza ovens and homes, just a little bit of everything. And it's, you're kind of limited by your imagination as to where you put this. We also get a lot of tile seconds, people mosaic with our tile.
So what kind of, so when you're, okay, two questions. So if I decide to find a tile that I like and I speak to you and I order, then do I have to find a special person who knows how to install those type of tiles?
One of the things that we do is we send an install guide that if the tile setter or the designer is actually moving at a pace that they should, they're going to take this little, you know, sheet of paper that we have that talks about how to install a handmade tile. Our book talks about it. That's all good and great. But if you live in an area and you're sort of like, how am I going to do this? I'm a little afraid of installing this. Because you asked earlier, is it durable? Yeah, it's very, very durable. But again, handmade. So there's sort of some ups and downs and idiosyncrasies. If you can't find a tile setter, the person who's setting or the person who's buying the tile can contact me and ask if I know of anybody in the area, and I have a pretty good network of understanding. But more importantly, if you're working with a designer and you're making something and you're worried about, you know, like, am I going to ruin this thing?
Right.
Your designer is going to have a great network of tile setters, and they'll know who to use and where the majority of the time. We have certainly had some people call us and say, you know, I did this thing and I saw it, you know, in a magazine, or I saw it, this influencer had your tile and I bought the tile and I wanted to do it as a DIY project. Setting tile for the first time is very tricky. That's why, you know, there's a whole chapter dedicated to that in my book. If you grout tile and you leave the grout on for an hour before you wash it off, that stuff is stuck, you know, it's just there. And so, you know, we've had people call us with these nightmare stories, and we're like, well, did you read the install? No,
well,
I didn't.
Let me ask you this question. I mean, look, again, depending on the job, you might have somebody who just wants to install, you know, a small little area, or, maybe a small backsplash. Then you might want somebody else might have a huge job. Would you recommend? I guess it depends on the person, because I was going to say,
maybe
if it's a small thing, but how challenging is it to try to install a tile yourself?
It's as challenging as the individual that's installing it. You know, I teach tile enough, and I know that, and art enough, and I know that everybody has their abilities, and it usually helps to consult a professional.
Can we do this? We have a break, but I just want to finish up a few things, and I want you to give the website, the book, and everything, and I'll post it also so that people can, because I think this is fascinating, and I think it makes a home unique. So just if you can stay on for another 5 minutes just after the break, and we'll sum it up, and hope you'll come back. This is really interesting. I'm very interested. I'm going to buy your book. We'll be right back with Forrest, and then we're going to talk about antiques.
You have all helped support MyPillow and their employees in these tough economic times. Mike Lindell knows this and continues to give back to listeners with deals on his most popular products. You've heard me recently speak about the My Slippers, Giza Sheets, MyPillow 2.0, and more. Great news! The MyPillow 6-pack bath towel sets are back in stock. They are extremely absorbent, yet still provides that soft feel you look for in a towel. The set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. Regular price is $79.98 for a limited time. You can get the 6-pack towel set for only $39.99 with promo code JOEP. That's a 50% savings. Go to MyPillow.com. Call 800-651-0798. Use the promo code JOEP to save 50% on the MyPillow 6-pack towel sets. Hey, it's Joe Piscopo. I'd like to introduce you to the premier business in the investigative and security field in the United States today, Brosnan Risk Consultants, founded by my friend Pat Brosnan, decorated retired NYPD detective. You must be diligent in protecting the business you work so hard to grow, family you cherish, and the lifestyle you've achieved. Luckily, there is Brosnan Risk Consultants to keep your business healthy, keep your family safe, and identify the approaching rising tide of danger and loss well before it destroys what you have built. Brosnan Risk Consultants have been protecting clients for over 25 years, operational in 45 states and over 500 cities. Don't settle for second best. Brosnan is the gold standard in investigative and security services. Call now 800-590-2180 or go online to brosnanrisk.com. BrosnanRisk.com.
Hi, this is Joan Herman, host of Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life's Conversations with Joan. Conversations with Joan focuses on topics that are important to your life. Every Sunday night, some of the world's most inspirational and influential people join me to discuss health and wellness, professional development, and personal well-being. They share their insights, tips, and strategies so you can thrive and live your best life now. Take time for yourself. Tune into Conversations with Joan every Sunday night at 10 p.m. right here on AM 970 The Answer. If you miss a show, be sure to visit our website so you can listen on demand. And while you're there, read our digital magazine and take part in our book club. Visit CYACYL.com. That's CYACYL.com.
Continuing with Eye on Real Estate, your premier source for real estate information. Here's the host of Eye on Real Estate, the vice chair of Douglas Elliman, Dottie Herman.
We're back, and I was so thrilled to have Forrest Lutch Middleton, the founder of FLM Ceramics. Designs them, he tells you how to install them. He has a great book out. The author of Handmade Tile, Design, Create, and Install Custom Tiles. So before we leave, and I'd love you to come back on again, because there's so much more we can talk about.
Sure.
How do we get your book, and give us the name of it and the website?
So it's Handmade Tile, Design, Create, and Install. It's published by Quarto Ceramics. Quarto Publishing. And my website is FLNCeramics.com, and then also I'm very active on Instagram in particular. Forrest Middleton or FLN. You can just do FLN Ceramics for Instagram. And you know, it's a sort of a narrative through pictures, right? So I'm a firm believer in, like, you know, when you own a business, you don't want to, like, I think a lot of business models are you get out of the way and you let the business sort of lead the way. And craft, I think craft is such a unique language that I try to integrate a lot of who I am with the business. And we talk about that quite a bit.
I love that. I love the fact that you're very engaging and you're willing to talk to the clients. You're not just, okay, I'll take care of it. We'll, you know, you get them really involved. And I think that's so much better.
Yeah, I agree. So, I think For me, really quick, as a kid, I used to drive all over Vermont and New England. My mom, you know, she travels a lot. And so I'd just take the car and I'd go from Pottery to Pottery. And, you know, you walk in and there's, you know, you knock on the door and they say, oh, come on in and have a cup of coffee. I've got some tea on the stove. I just made some bread. And you sit down and you talk to a potter. That's what handmade is all about. And so while I can't emulate that 100% with somebody who's in, you know, Florida or Minneapolis, at least, at the very least, I can talk to them over the phone about, it's a big thing. For some people, this is like a huge investment to put in a handmade tile in their home. It's an heirloom. And I've put tiles all over the world, and what we do, I think, elevates the quality of the home in a lot of ways. So I don't want to just stick it in the box and send it out. I'd rather actually, if someone is curious or concerned, let's have a conversation.
Well, I love your philosophy, and I think you speak like a true artist.
Oh, thank you.
Because, really, it's been a pleasure. I hope you'll come on again, because there's a lot more we can talk about. And please enjoy your weekend. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Dottie.
And I'll post
really
the books and everything
it.
On the website.
Okay, take
really
care.
Great. You're welcome. Have a great weekend. Well, that was really an interesting, I think, you know, really, it's a big job. I mean, you have to really kind of know what you're doing, and he sounds so engaging, and we're ready to help and really talk you through it. I don't think he's going to, like, try to get you off the phone in 3 minutes. Now, I'm assuming she's on the line. Do we have Susan Sully? Okay, because she's going to be coming on the line. And Susan Sully is the architect and interior design writer. And she is the author of Past, Present, Living, Heirlooms, and Antiques. And we will be discussing incorporating antiques into the home, which is especially important to me because I always think, like I said at the beginning of the show, You know, I have a fairly modern home, but I don't want it to look like a showroom and everything's the same. And I think that if you take things and incorporate antiques, it really gives it a special quality. It stands out. It's different and interesting. So we'll try to reach her now. And if we do, we do. And if we don't, then since that's not my specialty, then we'll have to. We are on. Great. Good morning, Susan. Good afternoon. It's closer to lunchtime. So glad you could be here.
Good morning, Dottie. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be with you on your show.
Oh, no. We're delighted to have you. I don't even know if we're enough time to finish, but you are an architecture and interior design writer, and you're the author of Past, Present, Living with Heirlooms and Antiques. Now, first of all, tell us a little about your background and how you got involved with this, and a little about why you decided to write this book.
Sure. Well, I grew up in the South with grandmothers and great aunts who lived in old houses filled with really kind of a mishmash of antiques that they'd inherited and their china and their silver. And I just loved that environment and, you know, the meals and the times we had together. And when I went to Yale, you know, I was in a completely different milieu and found myself just really drawn to architecture and the decorative arts and took some classes there and, you know, really learned about the history of the periods and all of that. And that was fascinating. But I will say what really shaped my education was the 20 years I spent working on books about architecture and design primarily in the South. And I just had great exposure to interesting houses. And I was always drawn to the ones that did not have, like, perfect uniform selection of antiques, and rather where you really felt the stories of the people and how they lived, and that they lived in a very relaxed, comfortable way with the things that they'd inherited. And I that always appealed to me, and I celebrated that in my books. So at a certain point, my parents were in their 70s, and they were downsizing, and all of a sudden, I found myself inheriting all the antiques, the china, the silver, the furniture, the rugs, the artwork, And I thought, well, what am I going to do with this stuff? And the good news is I've had a lot of exposure to great houses where people, both young homeowners and older ones, have lived with their antiques and heirlooms. And I kind of had an idea what to do, but I had a lot of friends my age who were in the same boat. And like, what are we going to do with this stuff? I mean, all this brown furniture, all this fancy china and crystal. And they were really baffled. And I thought, you know, this is a good time to write this book. I think there are a lot of people out there who want to understand how can we mix these wonderful things from our past and our modern lifestyle. So that's how I came to write the book.
All right. And where can you get your book?
My book is available online. If you just go to any of the online booksellers and just put in Susan Sully, my books will come up. You know, they're available in the major bookstores or design stores. And you can go to my website, which is SusanSully.com, and there's a page there with all of my books, and you can just click on them and order them.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So now I have a question for you. So I have I really redid my whole house. I almost knocked it down. And I did it fairly modern. But I don't want it to look like, you know, I mean, I don't want it to look like a showroom. So I need to, because I think it's really interesting to incorporate modern with some antiques.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I admire a modern home decorated in classic modern or contemporary taste, but I have to say I prefer a layered feel.
Right.
To me, an entirely modern home, it makes a great, strong style statement, but to me, it doesn't tell the human story. I mean, all of us, we have a personal past. We have a collective past that shapes who we are, and it contributes complexity to our character. And so I think sprinkling a few antiques into a modern interior, especially pieces that we grew up with, that adds depth and complexity. And so the environment is not just pleasing to the eye, but to the soul. There's something about antiques. They're made of exquisite natural materials. They're crafted by hand. If you combine these with sleek modern objects, everything looks the better for it.
A mix of
antique and modern, a mix of antique and modern furniture shows both to advantage. And I also think, you know, in a modern architecture with clean lines and lots of light, it's a great canvas for showcasing the beauty of antiques.
So how would somebody say, like myself, because it could be challenging on what antiques to fit. What is, how do you go about incorporating antiques into that? You know, in other words, do they have to be things that you've had, or can you buy new ones or go to an antique store? I mean, how do you?
Right. I think it's kind of all of the above. I mean, first of all, I think incorporating antiques into a modern home, it's not as hard as people think. You just want to, if you didn't inherit them, then you can go out and buy them. But just look for the ones that are, you know, really good looking. And it could be ones with simple lines that are going to go with a modern interior, or like really strong historic lines that can make a great accent piece. Either way, you're good to go. You've found a few antiques that are going to work in your interior. And like specific examples, if you inherited some antique armchairs that have a distinctly historic look, you can reupholster those in a solid fabric or a contemporary pattern, and it's going to blend perfectly with your modern interior. Or if you've got a set of antique chairs for a dining table, I've seen those combined with a glass top table or a stone top table, and so you're getting this great mix of the old and the new. So I think, you know, you just look for what you think you're going to be able to integrate and do it creatively.
Okay, Susan, we have to take a quick break. We're going to be right back on. We're with Susan Sully. We're talking about architecture, interior design, how to incorporate antiques into your home. You're not going to want to miss this. I think this is so important. We'll be right back with Susan after a quick commercial break.
Does springtime make you think of more daylight, flowers and trees in bloom, or even spring cleaning? Those are all good, but not as great as the Invite Health Buy One, Get One Free Spring Into Savings event. The sale is on now. Buy any Invite Health product at suggested retail and get the second bottle free. Spring into an Invite store today to learn more about how to stay healthy with help from one of our nutrition experts. Give us a call to order by phone right now at 800-673-2345. That's 800-673-2345. Listen to past shows and informative podcasts all at invitehealth.com. Visit invitehealth.com for our retail locations and to set up a free nutritional consultation in person or by phone. Take advantage of Invite's limited time buy one get one free spring into savings sale. Contact Invite at 800-673-2345. That number again, 800-673-2345, or go to invitehealth.com.
The madness is here, and at Route 22 Toyota in Hillside, New Jersey, that means slam dunk savings all month long. Our buddy Alex Kinsella, he's the general manager at Route 22 Toyota, called to fill us in on all the madness going on, like zero down leases on all your favorite Toyota models, and low 2.99% APR financing for up to 72 months. Plus, at Route 22 Toyota, everyone drives, thanks to their goal of 100% credit approval. Call them at 973-705-8900 to get pre-approved today. Again, that's 973-705-8905 to get pre-approved for a loan on a brand new Toyota from Route 22 Toyota. It's all part of their slam dunk savings going on right now, where you can save with the madness of zero down leases and low 2.99% APR financing for up to 72 months. Go see Alex and his team at Route 22 Toyota in Hillside, New Jersey, and remember to tell them Joe Piscopo sent you.
Subject to primary lender approval, not all buyers will qualify financing on select new Toyota models through Toyota Financial Services. See deal for details. Expires April 1st, 2024.
Hi, it's Arthur Idala. If you listen to my show regularly, you may have heard me talk about my respect for court reporters. Well, I've got some exciting news for you. The New York State Unified Court System recently held a press conference and declared court reporting as the best career you've never heard of. Why? Because they just created a position designed specifically for brand new court reporters. The court reporting trainee position allows new court reporters to enter the court system making an annual salary upwards of $75,000 with an additional $4,600 in location pay if you live in New York City, Nassau, or Suffolk County. To qualify for the position, you don't need any working experience as a court reporter. You just need to have graduated from an approved court reporting institution and write at 225 words per minute. If you're not sure if court reporting is right for you, you can test drive the program through Plaza's free virtual A to Z program. For more information, email info@plazacollege.edu. That's info@plaza.edu.
Continuing with Eye on Real Estate, your premier source for real estate information. Here's the host of Eye on Real Estate, the vice chair of Douglas Elliman, Dottie Herman.
We're back with Susan Sully, architect and interior design writer and the author of Past, Present Living with Heirlooms and Antiques, which I find fascinating, and I think it's a great, so lucky to have her on the show. So let me ask you this. How does, what kind of antiques work best in a home, and what should you avoid when utilizing antiques?
Right, well, here's really my advice to people, which I think simplifies it, which is that just see what captures your imagination and find a way to make it work. You know, that's really so much fun to just go out and see what grabs you. You know, I say that decorating with antiques is really like planning a great party. You think about who your friends are, both your familiar ones and your new ones, younger people and older people, who's a great conversationalist, who's a listener, who's flamboyant, who's laid back. And you select the group of people who will make the best gathering. And that's what you do when you're decorating with antiques. You know, you kind of look for that same thing, like who's going to go together well for an event that's like both harmonious but stimulating and fun. And that kind of takes, to me, some of the mystery out of it. Like, you know, should I buy all this type? Should I buy all that type? You know, I think in our modern day that going eclectic is the way to go. But you don't want to go too eclectic, you know, like too many styles, too many types of wood. You know, that creates a party. There's nobody's going to have fun. Everybody's going to be talking over each other. You want to have it so that there are a few strong pieces that stand out and some other ones that can sort of be in the background and let them have space. And so, you know, that, to me, that's a whole other way of looking at it. Let's not come from it from style, from period, from wood type. Let's say, you know, what works together? And I think, you know, a lot, it's good to kind of play with that too. Like, you know, get some stuff that you know you're going to keep. And then if you can get some things, you know, to try out and bring in and move around, they'll tell you what works together.
Right. So what would your advice be, Alec? And again, I'm going to post your website and everything like that. So, how does someone get in touch with you? Should they go to your website? How do they?
Yeah, they can go to my website, and there's a link to email me directly. Also, they can go to me, Instagram, Susan.Sully, and direct mail me. And I'm happy to share some more of the fun things I've learned about this.
That's wonderful. So, and I'm going to post where you can get Susan's book. Susan, thank you so much. I hope you'll come on again. I'll be calling you. I have a few questions because I'm really looking forward to, I just got through with my house and redoing it. And now it needs something, you know, I need some antiques. So it's interesting. You don't want it to look like a showroom, you know, where it's just.
No, you don't. I mean, my advice is pick a strong piece that can be an accent piece in a room that has more understated things, you know, like lots of, you know, simple upholstered modern pieces are a great counterpoint to like a strong coffee table or a strong dresser that's in the room. And another fun thing to do is you can have like all simple upholstered pieces and just use quirky little side tables, you know, that like I use an old milking stool from my grandmother's cotton farm where she grew up as a side table. So you know, like use your imagination and it can be really refined, but a rustic piece really just works as a little piece of sculpture and a conversation piece. And don't be afraid to mix the refined. Like I have a friend who has beautiful Wedgwood pieces on his mantelpiece in a living room that has contemporary art. So, you know, they can really stand well together.
Thank you so much. And hopefully you'll come back again. I'd love to hear from you. And I certainly am going to post for everyone if you, some of you are driving, and if you're driving, I don't want you to write. I'll post on the website and on the radio show website where you can get the book and all
okay,
the information
great.
About the website. Have a great
thank
weekend,
you so
and thank
much,
you
Dottie.
So much.
You too.
Bye. So we have a little time left, and I'm not sure if I really explained. I'm not sure if I had time or did explain properly or see, because of the new, the whole thing with this MLS and with the listing brokers commissions. And basically the whole idea is to separate the commission pieces. So in other words, this is the buyer, this is the seller's, what the seller pays, and this is what the buyer is going to pay. And we're separating them. And prior to that, you could have always had a buyer's broker and had an agreement with a buyer's broker where the buyer's broker would represent you, not the seller, and that was by agreement only. I can't talk about the entire country, but I can tell you that, you know, in the metropolitan area, you know, they might have used it here and there, but it really never caught on. So basically, there's no more automatic commission split because usually, and it didn't always have to be that way, but usually whatever the total commission was, usually was split between the listing broker, the person that listed your property, and then the person that actually sold the property. Usually it was split kind of in half. So if it was six, it was 3 and 3. If it was 5, then it was 2.5 and 2.5. Okay. So now what's happening is each commission has to be negotiated individually with the buyer, with the seller and the buyer. So the seller, you know, if I was a listing broker, and if you're a seller, here's the questions I would think about. I would obviously interview brokers that you want to list your property, that you want to represent your property. And when you interview them, you're going to ask them, what services are you going to provide? Because I'm going to give you a bit of advice. Do not let a listing broker come in and not give you a marketing plan on how they plan to market your home, what they plan to do with it, if they plan to put it on MLS, but that's just a little piece. You know, are they going to put ads in? Are they going to market it in magazines? Are they going to market it to other brokers? So have a marketing plan, and if they're going to do open houses, whatever. But have something in writing, and then you can go back to that, you know, every couple of weeks to see if it's working or not. Again, like if you're having open houses and no one shows up, then that's not a good tool for this particular house. So then you want to try something different. But basically, you're going to negotiate that price with your listing broker. So let's say I'm the listing broker and I say to you, okay, my fee is 3%, and here's what I'm going to do for you for 3%. I'm going to list your property. I'm going to represent you. I'm going to be present when the buyers are come to your home. I'm going to advertise in X papers. I'm going to call every broker that showed your home and see, get feedback. I'm going to help you declutter or get your home ready to show, whatever. I'm going to sit there and tell you my services, what I'm going to do for you, and how much my cost to you is. So you can say yes, no, but if you decide that I'm the right person for you, then you're going to, okay, Dottie, fine. I'm going to go along and I'm going to sign this listing with you. Then I'm going to say to you, well, okay, what do you want to do with the buyer's commission? Do you want the buyer to pay for the commission separately? Okay, and so that, let's just say, and I'm just using a 6% commission. It could be 5, it could be 4, whatever it might be. If you're taking, let's say, so now instead of, say you wanted to take a 6% commission, you're now only going to pay 3 because you're the seller, and you're not going to, and you say, well, I don't want to be responsible for the buyer's commission. Let them pay that themselves. So you can do that. So if you do that, then it would say that the seller's, your commission is 3% and you're paying that to the listing broker, and the buyer has to be on his own and has to find a buyer's broker and negotiate with the buyer's broker the fee that he's going to pay the buyer's broker or she's going to pay the buyer's broker. And that fee can be anything because fees were always negotiable. Every real estate fee is always negotiable. So that buyer now is going to find an agent that will represent him, and that means represent him, and discuss the fee, and I would tell you it should be in writing. Okay, and then how is that financed? Well, you could, if you're a buyer and you finance that, you could probably just, you just probably, whatever mortgage you're going for, you would add the commission of the mortgage probably onto that. You would add the commission that you have to pay the broker, the buyer's broker, and then pay it out of the mortgage proceeds. Now, that's one option. Another option is the seller can say, you know what? I want to give an incentive. I want my house to really stand out, and I want to give an incentive. So guess what? I'm going to pay all the fees, or I'm going to pay a part of the fees. You can do that. There's so many versions, and I guess we're running out of time, but I'll continue because there's a lot of, still a little bit of confusion. I'll continue next week and try to explain to you. And if you have questions, just email me, DottieHerman.com. Okay. And I will get back to you or personally call you and give you a good answer. But this will all get worked out. It's just a matter of it's being new. Not going to be that difficult. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week.
The preceding hour of programming paid for by DTHY Realty Incorporated.